are listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got Martin Page. Martin!
Hello.
Hello, Mike. Let's lift it all up. Yes, I'm here.
That's right. And also joining us today, we have Bobby Sommerfeld.
Bobby!
And joining us all the way from, I don't know where he is right now, we've got the one and only Iron Man.
Out of space, it sounds like.
Of the Audio Nowcast, Rob Arbiter.
Hello there, Mike and other gentlemen. Hello. And for this week, I am in Philadelphia.
He's in Philadelphia. And joining us today, we have a really special guest from the Audio Brothers. Audio Bros, we have Sebastian Katz.
How you doing?
Yay! Sebastian.
I don't know if I'd say really special, but, you know, I'm here.
Oh, no. It's special.
We're just talking about the dress.
Thank you for having me.
One thing, though, is on the second half, we're going to talk to Sebastian Katz about the string library from the other Audio Brothers. And, man, well, it's Audio Bros, right? That's the
Audio Bro. I mean, there's more than one of us, but
Audio Bro. But let me tell you, the LA, their string, LA Scoring Sound String Library is phenomenal, and that's all I'm going to say right now.
I want it then.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Yeah, you're going to get it.
I want it.
That's the only reason Martin's here, I
that's
think.
That's right. I want something free.
but before we
I've got a pirate copy if you want.
I want it tonight.
Great. That's going
to – I'm sorry, Sebastian.
Oh, that's all right.
But really quick, let's start with a couple things that have kind of made headlines in the audio world, and one is –
We got the podcast working.
Well, we got the podcast. Yes, that's the first thing.
In over 3 hours.
That's a record for us.
We got to talk about Pro Tools 11.
Oh, and, do we have to?
And what's happening there. You know, Avid over NAB talked about Pro Tools 11, and Pro Tools 11 is going to do a lot of really cool things. For instance, non-real-time bounces is
offline
one big thing.
Bouncing.
So Pro Tools is basically going to catch up with
that's hilarious.
With DAW technology from like 2003.
Or Cubase about 19 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's,
you're not a fan, are you, Bob?
No, I like Pro Tools. It's good.
Okay.
But the thing I really want to talk about is first of all, you know, it's the standard. I totally understand that. But some of the pricing models that they have is just really kind of crazy. And to their credit, for one thing, people who brought the production toolkit, which is basically turns your Pro Tools 10 into Pro Tools 10 HD, you know, they were going to have to spend – it was $2,000 to get that toolkit, which – and they – Avid wanted them to spend another grand to get HD 11. And it just seems like – you know,
rip-off tone?
Yeah, it's just like they're trying to throw their weight around, and it's a different world. You know, there was a time where, you know, Pro Tools could do things because they were the king of the mountain, but there's a lot of options out there. I mean, they want – in order to get Pro Tools 11 HD, you have to buy basically an audio interface. So you're going to spend 10 grand for a card and an audio interface. So you're going to spend like 6 grand, 5 grand for the Thunderbolt native and an audio interface. That's a lot of money. There's a lot of options for that, right?
And this is interesting to us, isn't it, Mike?
Because
you're mapping it out for me now. So, he is. He actually is.
Yeah. And the thing about it, too, is, you know, not only do you have to invest in that, but, you know, your RTAS plugins aren't going to be compatible with 11. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure there's developers out there. Well, like the Audio Bro. I mean – how are you guys doing? Are you looking at the AAX? Are you waiting until Native Instrument updates Contact Player?
Well, you know, the good thing about what we do in licensing the Contact Engine is we sort of don't have to deal with any of that. I mean, there's a huge number of plugin formats and 32-bit, 64-bit, cross-platform. And Native Instruments is such a powerhouse company in the industry right now that they can handle those transitions much more seamlessly than a lot of smaller developers.
Right.
So we're will be AAX for the new system, I'm sure, very soon. I mean, I don't think Native has announced anything as far as the 64-bit AAX, but I think they are 32-bit already.
But even the 32-bit's going to have to be recompiled for 64.
Right, and I don't think there's been any talk of a bit bridge or anything like that. Right. Those are always a pain anyway.
Rob, do you have any input on this that you can actually talk about?
No, I don't, actually. And I was very sad I missed NAB this year. I was on another project here on the East Coast and just could not get away. I can confirm everything you've said so far.
When is
I don't know what they actually announced because I wasn't at the show, so I got you. Apologize.
When's Pro Tools 11 coming out?
They said at the end of the second quarter. So that would put it probably before the end of June. Well, the other thing is, along with dropping RTAS support because it can't do RTAS because RTAS can't do fast and real time, I think there was a time where you didn't have the option. If you really wanted to do Pro Audio, you basically had to go to Pro Tools. But nowadays, granted, I think Pro Tools does a lot of this stuff better, but still, there's a lot of options out there. I mean, just Bobby, you're Nuendo, and you also, Cubase too. And
Nuendo and Cubase are very similar. Nuendo has more options than Cubase, and it's very flexible. I joke about Pro Tools. Obviously, I respect it because it's a good standard, does great work. You know, you can do great records on it, of course. But Nuendo, the features that Pro Tools are implementing now,
right,
have been available on Nuendo for a lot,
right,
a long time.
A long time.
And
go ahead, Rob.
I was just going to say, I mean, if someone doesn't need to interchange with the rest of the world and is doing encapsulated projects themselves, which is a huge part of what music and post is today, except like in, Gershon's high-end film world and stuff, those people can go to other platforms. I mean, Pro Tools is not unbeatable. For some parts of the industry, it currently is, but all it takes is a massive groundswell and people start adopting other things. If Pro Tools prices themselves out of the market, and I had huge issues with the Pro Tools 10 pricing, and it sounds like 11 is going to have similar issues.
Right.
They can price themselves out of the market. If you go back 20 years ago, you had Synclavier and New England Digital sitting on top of the world.
Right.
And this little upstart, called DigiDesign was out there with Pro Tools starting up. The tides can change when companies get arrogant. And that really concerns me.
No, that's so true. And that's I think there's a lot of arrogance going on here. Especially, even if you want to work in other studios, all you really need are your 24-bit files or your, 2496K files. It doesn't matter what you put them in on the other side as long as,
A lot of people have got banks and banks of mix templates that they use, like pop song mixes and film mixes. So for that to change and migrate to Nuendo or any other platform for that matter, they're too busy to even do that. So
yeah, that wouldn't happen anytime soon.
Right.
But they're wrong if they think it wouldn't happen ever.
Oh, of course.
And you know what? Even adopting a new software like a DAW, like I'm sure that I can mix on Pro Tools, but I know I can mix on Nuendo. I can mix on anything because a lot of times I just need to know how it's routed and understand the signal flow, and then boom, I'm there. And the fact that I've worked on so many because I work in Logic, I work in a lot, it's really easy for me to swing from one to another. And Pro Tools, even in post-production, you had to go with Pro Tools because they had all the machine controls and they had all the stuff to talk post-production. But, nowadays, I don't think I've done a layback.
But Nuendo's had that for a long time,
months,
too.
In months and months. Exactly. I think Rob makes a good point, though. I think there's a certain amount of arrogance that they got to really watch out for. I mean, their stock, guys, is at $6 a share. Even within this last year, I think the high was at 17. I mean, they are in a really precarious situation with the company. And it just seems to me the way to get a strong company is not by alienating a lot of people. I'm not going to upgrade my HD3 system to an HX, the cards, because that's a 10 grand investment. Right now I'm with Martin and we're putting together his studio, and And that's not even remotely in our minds, because we just don't have to do that.
Let me ask this question, then, an ignorant question. If you're on Pro Tools 10 and 11 comes out as a songwriter, is all the software not going to be compatible with 11?
Well,
no, it's not.
No, unless it has an AAX. Like the transition we're doing with your studio is they're selling with Pro Tools. If you buy Pro Tools 11, you get a Pro Tools 10 install. You can run 10 and 11 at the same time. And essentially, I'm putting together one of his new systems, and we're getting a ton of new effects because we're going to get on that cycle where, okay, we're going to go with the newer stuff that'll get updated. We still have his old system that can use some of the old stuff. But we want to get, you know, it's not just buying a new Pro Tools to get to 11. It's what are the upgrades going to be? How much is it going to cost to upgrade your plugins? How much is it going to cost to upgrade, you know, your sample library?
Do you even have a new enough Mac to run 64-bit native, or is it middle generation that's simulated?
Well, you can use your new iMacs. You can use the brand new iMacs. You can use the brand new MacBook Retinas will work. But you're right. If you don't have anything brand new, you're not going to be able to take advantage of that in the first place. I just think I think Pro Tools 11 is the Windows 8 of the audio world.
Great. Well, I'll be pleased, because I think other applications out there are better than it. It'd be great if they got a bit of love too.
Well, I think that slowly the advantages of Pro Tools have just been wearing away over the years. I mean, many years ago, it was just such a standard, because not only did it have great audio routing and a very simple workflow for audio editing and recording, but you also had that DSP acceleration on your cards. And, you know, it's easy to forget how slow processors were 5-10 years ago.
Right.
Now, besides having the UADs and, you know, the UAD's Apollo interface where you have some DSP acceleration, computer processors have just gotten so fast that there isn't such a demand to be able to run all the plugins. But at the same time, I sort of do sympathize with Avid in terms of that development, because they've had a standard, this RTAS standard has been with them so long. It has cobwebs, just like any technology that's dated.
Microsoft.
Windows has the same issue in many ways. And in order to continue to innovate and maybe push the platform forward, they needed to start a little bit fresher.
Right.
Now, I don't know that excuses what they're doing in terms of the upgrade paths and the way it seems like maybe they're making it difficult for their current user base to make that transition.
That's my biggest thing, is not so much innovate. I said go ahead and innovate. And if we have to change plugin formats, we change plugin formats.
Mm-hmm.
But don't make it cost thousands of dollars. I'm going to rebuy my a 10 grand system every, you know, 5 years. It doesn't have to be that way. And let's look at Apollo, right? They've got onboard DSP processing on their interface. I mean, where is that equivalent in Pro Tools? Why don't they have that? Why don't you come out with something that costs $3,000, has some processing on it, and, you know, the native, that little box is just a dumb little box. Mm-hmm. I mean, it basically just connects your Pro Tools to whatever interface that they have. There's so many things that they could be doing that I think are a little smarter and better for not only themselves, but better for the whole audio community. And
well,
I just
also, how about the idea that you still can't, with all this hoo-ha, you still can't put your tracks in folders?
Right. Oh, yeah.
And you still can't put your sounds in folders. I mean, we're talking about stuff that's like decades.
Yeah, basic stuff.
I just think, like I said, I just think there's a certain amount of arrogance. You know, it's
The big contender against Pro Tools? What's the other one?
Don't you think, I mean, I think if I were a much younger person starting out in the audio industry today, I don't think I would be lusting over Pro Tools the same way my generation did, when every big studio was running it, was the hot new thing. I mean, I was actually talking to Bobby today. They gave me an NFR of Studio One from Personas. And I've been playing with it, and the workflow is just sleek. It's fast, and it doesn't have all the features of like a Nuendo, Cubase, Logic, those things.
Right.
But it's just a lot sexier. And for people who are writing songs or recording in their home studios, it seems like a much better fit than what Pro Tools is offering.
Is that the main contender?
I'll give him a plug. It, you know, it's that Studio One is created by the inventor of Nuendo.
That's right. He came around to my place, Rob. You were there, and I couldn't remember his name.
Wolfgang Kundrath.
Thank you very much.
What a brilliant program. Man. The more I've learned about that program, the more impressed I've been. And I'm a 15-year veteran of Logic, so yeah. it's different, but it's really cool.
But the big thing is you know, when you're asking what are the other options, Martin, just the fact that there are other options. You've got, you know, Reason, and you've got Live, and you've got people. Their workflow is different. They're doing different things.
A true comparison to Pro Tools is not Reason or Live. I mean, they are good. They're good songwriting.
No, you're absolutely right. But
serious post-production of Pro Tools and serious audio recording and it's Nuendo Cubase, you know, mildly Logic, but okay.
You know what?
Cubase is its main contender.
You got to put Live up there because Brandon, who does
Ableton
all those,
Live?
Yes, that's
not
what
even
he
close.
Works. That's
not
for,
even close.
But that's, what, Bobby, what specifically are you talking about?
Okay. Well,
but
I mean,
that's what he works in. I'm
try
just saying,
doing what we were doing today in Ableton Live.
Yeah, no, for that kind of heavy duty post work, you're not going to do it.
Right, but I'm just saying it's a different ball game. You have a lot of different specialties. You've got Brandon, who can do all his work that he needs to get done in Live. He's not a slave to Pro Tools. You've got songwriters that can do their work. Not everybody has to be the jack of all trades that Pro Tools is.
Correct.
And I think that's where this arrogance that people talk about is because they think, well, if you're going to do pro work, you need to do this. No, you can do pro work on anything. There's certain people that need all the bells and whistles.
Right.
As a mixer, I do. I need that. And I don't want to work on anything else, but I could work if I had to, like I said.
But even there, I think Nuendo is just much better software.
Much better.
Which it absolutely may be. And the only reason why I don't use it is because I was never exposed to it. You
right,
know?
Sure.
And
why change if you have something that's working for you?
Exactly. I mean, I've got all my templates and everything like we're talking about. All this to say is it just – I would watch Avid. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if Pro Tools got spun off because their stock's at $6. You know, they just got a new chief financial officer. They delayed their fourth quarter reporting and a bunch of groups are suing. And it's just kind of a mess. And there's some value in that company. I just don't know if that company is going to survive the way it is now.
Well, you talk about stock prices. Stock prices are based on forward earnings mostly and growth and potential growth. And when the stock price declines other than the fundamentals of the company, it's generally because it's not growing any further. And Apple is one example right now. It's trading at $398 or $93 today. Closed that. Reporting earnings tomorrow, but it was $700 9 months ago. Everybody loved it and everybody owned it. But the growth is gone. So with Avid, it's possible that company could go bankrupt and they'd fold the thing into something else because their growth is not there anymore. Because the Avids, I mean, because of Ableton Lives and Reasons and all the other applications we discussed, they're just eating their lunch and their growth is falling away. So
yeah.
There is a whole new administration at Avid. So something's going to change.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I went on Yahoo Finances and I read some news about their CEO and – apparently, he's been brought into other companies that have been failing, and he's basically split them and sold them off. And that was his, his big thing in this message that was
Steinberg.
That was the reputation of the last CEO of Avid too, actually.
So,
do you guys know, was this new group brought in before or after the Sibelius team got laid off?
I don't know.
I think it was just after, but I'm not sure.
Right.
This is a doom podcast.
It was after.
Doom laden.
I have to say, I'm just.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the world
you've been
is
talking
over,
about
yeah.
this for a long time.
So many better things. Yeah, so many better things out there.
Yeah.
Just, everybody's just got sucked into it.
Mm-hmm. You know what? You know, I've been using Pro Tools, and I think I'm really passionate about it probably longer than anybody on the podcast. I mean, I've been mixing on Pro Tools since the 90s. 1996, I think I did my first mix, and I was
a sound tester for Sound Tools when it came out before DigiDesign.
Oh. And I worked, and we did a series for PBS called The Eddy Files. That was the first like TV series done back in Pro Tools. So I have a long history with it, and I just find it's you know.
I want to ask Rob. But Rob, you work on all different formats, right?
Yeah, I've always sort of tried to be platform agnostic because the worst thing is to miss out on a job because you don't happen to know the one tool they need.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's good advice.
Yeah.
Yep.
Excellent advice.
That is really good. And anyhow, like I said, my passion is for I want to see Pro Tools do good. Mm-hmm. I wish they would make it more accessible. I wish they would drop the price to make it an easier entry for a lot of people.
Well, even for you to be talking like this, because, you know, you've used it for such a long time, it must mean that there's cracks showing on the edges.
I feel a lot the same way about Logic. You know, I've been with that software for 15 years.
Yep. I'm sorry.
He's sorry for you because you've been on Logic.
Rob is not a fan of Logic.
Rob, you're saying you haven't spent a lot of late nights laboring in Logic's environment?
No, I have. That's why.
That's why he's moved to Philadelphia. He's suicidal. He's on the run.
But I feel much the same way in that it's staggering a little bit and it's a little bit behind now, and I'm not sure what future development is going to be. But I agree with you. I really root for all these platforms to continue innovating because they push each other. And the more good platforms we have, the better definitely. Our software is going to be.
I mean, the best thing for me is when Cubase came out with 7, and that's like, that's awesome. You know, let's just keep it going, keep them all rolling. The other thing, though, is, you know, just learn your tools, but learn your craft. You know, that's the most important thing. It's, you know.
Tone it up.
Yeah, it's not only about the software you work on, it's how you use it and what you use, and we can go on. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Pro Tools as it moves forward, and we'll see if the company moves forward. So it could be
and
all.
I will say that if you ever turn down a job because you don't have or know how to use Logic or don't have or know how to use Cubase or something, if not knowing or having a few $100 tool makes you turn down paying work, then that means you need to rethink your approach, because that's a really bad reason to pass on a job.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Unfortunately, I'm guilty of that. I've actually not done work because people had it on Logic. I'm like, oh, you know, I don't use Logic. And they've just recently this guy had some stuff. He said, can you help me with these tracks? I said, you're in Logic. I said, I do it in Nuendo. He said, well, I only know how to use Logic. I'm like, I said, you know, I just didn't do it because of that. Mm-hmm. Because it's just
if it was going to be megabucks, then that's a real shame. If it wasn't going to be megabucks, you save yourself some aggravation.
But you know what industry we're in? There's no such thing as megabucks.
Yeah, well,
it was like $6 an hour with a six pack and a pizza.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break, and then when we come back, because I think we've pretty much exhausted the whole Pro Tools, we're going to visit with Sebastian Katz, and we're going to talk about some of the fun stuff of software, like sample libraries, and we're going to talk about synths and soft synths, and we're going to talk
cross-dressing. He likes that too.
And we actually, I got a question from
Bobby. Knows me well.
Well, it's what he's wearing tonight. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it illustrates that. He looks good in like polka dot red.
He does, isn't he? I like that.
And I've got a question for Martin that I'll be interested to hear.
Not about cross-dressing, I hope. Right?
Well, we come to the expert. You know.
All right. So we're going to take a break, and we'll see you on the other side.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were talking about Pro Tools and how depressed we were all. Pricing.
Except me, I'm happy.
Actually, you know what? Let me tell you what the pricing is really quick.
What is the pricing? Good question.
Well, he mapped it out for
just
me.
Your soul. Yeah. Just your soul.
Well, first of all, like I said, you need to, if you want to get Pro Tools HD, you can get it in native at $5,000. There's no real good cross grade. Well, I take that back. If you have an 003, you can get in on some cross grades. There's tons of different cross grades, but basically, if you're brand new to the Pro Tools family, it's going to cost you about $5,000. If you want to go on the HDX cards, that's going to be about $10,000 with an interface. If you want the production toolkit features, they were going to have to upgrade for $1,000, although I recently heard that they're taking a look into maybe adjusting that, but still it's just a lot of money.
I've got a 003, so I can upgrade, can I?
I think so. I think there's an upgrade path to
kill
a version.
Sell it to someone.
But yeah, so maybe. Anyhow, Sebastian.
Sir.
Tell us a little bit about Audio Bros.
Okay.
Audio Bro.
We're a sample library developer company, and we have a product called LA Scoring Strings. And it's a virtual string orchestra, runs in the Kontakt engine, so it's cross-platform, all the major plugin formats, 32-bit, 64-bit. The main focus of LA Scoring Strings is beautiful legato Divisi strings, and what that means is, rather than just recording string sections as a big group, which is what predominantly you see, we record in smaller sections. So when you have the violins, we break up that section into smaller groups. So we'll have a group of four and then a separate group of four and then a group of eight. And to create the full violin section, you can layer all three of those together. But it ends up being a much more realistic, intimate, and expressive sound than you get when you just sort of verbatim record 16 players at right. once.
Let me interrupt you really quick.
Sure. Okay?
Because I hadn't heard much from their library. I've heard of your library. And then I started doing a little bit of research because when I found out Sebastian was coming on. And let me just tell you, their sample library is phenomenal.
Oh, okay? Thank you.
No, really, it is phenomenal. And it is probably – okay, there's a lot of really good libraries out there where you can get – where you can capture a sound of the strings. You know, a lot of people, you know, have – there's some pretty famous ones that, you know, capture the sound. But they – capture the emotion, and I really do mean that. Their auto arrange function that they have can it's like you think you're really hearing a person play, actually people play, just the way they do the ensembles. And I want to encourage people to go to Audio Bro's website, audiobro.com, their website, and watch some of the videos. And if you want something to see really impressive, go look at the audio with the auto arrange demo. It is truly amazing. And I was blown away. And I don't get too excited about sample libraries. Haven't in a long time, you know, because after a while, you know, you hear one good drum, there's tons of good sure. drums and things like that. But man, this string library was impressive.
No,
I don't know.
Thank
I just
you.
Had to give you props.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I will
that.
No longer interrupt.
Well, you have to also, the company and the library was created by my friend Andrew, our friend Bobby, and my friend Andrew Crestes. And I came on shortly thereafter and have been actively developing since then. But he created something really interesting and special. And I'm happy to carry on the development on it.
But let me ask Bobby and Sebastian about this string software I'm seeing coming from England, Spitfire.
Mm-hmm.
Are they good? What do you think?
Well, professionally, I have to say no.
But okay.
No, I'm just joking. Yeah. They're actually a very good company.
Yeah. They do a lot of stuff, don't they? Percussion.
I think they record quite a bit in Air Lyndhurst, which mm-hmm. is, of course, a very famous scoring stage.
Right.
You know, it's interesting. There's a lot of great developers out there, and I encourage anybody looking into libraries to look into all of them. Mm-hmm. I own many of them. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone I know owns multiple libraries because there's sure. just different flavors, right. different focuses. Mm-hmm. We have a very specific focus with our string libraries. Spitfire has a different take on it, but I think they do phenomenal stuff. And, okay. and there are many other developers that do.
Yeah. You know, one thing I noticed about your library is a lot of times when you listen to libraries and they will hype their room that we recorded or sure. the places that recorded, sometimes that gets in your way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that reverb can actually get in your way. And I didn't find that to be the case with yours. I mean, you have reverb and you definitely can put it in a room. But to me –
Well, they used Bobby's toilet, which is incredible. Yeah,
well, yeah, amazing reverb.
Yeah. Actually, quite, there's a laugh. We did do the demo in there's a violin on that
I knew it.
There is.
I knew it.
Right?
It is.
But I felt like I was hearing the instruments and the place wasn't getting in my way. Which
that's like different developers have different philosophies. And with that library, the choice was made not to bake in so much sound that it lost all dexterity.
Right. Fantastic.
So it's interesting because some people really prefer the libraries where they can sit down, play a key, and it sounds perfect. They don't have to think about it. But it becomes very difficult to sequence and make music out of that because it's really a fully baked thing already. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you do a little bit less and give a little more power to the users, the flexibility is enormous.
Well, you know, it says it in your name, you know, the scoring sound. I mean, when you're scoring, you want it to be able to fit as one piece of a much larger puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Remember when the Lindrum came out and it was all the John Bonham bass drum, wasn't it? There was this massive ambience that all you heard through the 80s was that sound.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the same kind of thing. You used it for a while, but then you thought, I wish I had more control
just
over
this. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, a good example is the Giga Sampler Library with a Giga Studio 3, where you could use their convolution reverb and you can actually place the mic in the orchestra, you know? And
Audio Bro has that feature.
We have that feature built in.
Right, which sounds all good and dandy, but sometimes doing those little tricks can't really translate into your mix that well.
Sure.
The small thing that Sebastian mentioned, it's divisi, meaning to say it's separated, you can write. So they've got four, there's a group of eight string players and two groups of fours that you can choose to play all together or not. But when you're writing, for example, lots of times the string libraries these days or that have been around that are not purely divisi, they've been recorded, the whole string section's playing one note or two, and then they sample them across the keyboard. If you, as the keyboard player, want to write some string parts and you play a triad, each finger is triggering, say, 12 players.
The sound of 12 players.
The sound of 12 players. So all of a sudden that's 36 players playing that chord, which is not real. In a real orchestra, you don't have 36 string players all of a sudden occur. You've got 24 or 12 or whatever the size is.
Right.
So with the LA scoring strings option, it automatically determines you're playing a triad. So one string has to go to four guys. One finger has to go to four guys. Other finger has to go to the other four guys, and you choose... And that's why it sounds real.
That's brilliant.
And that's true divisi.
You can hear that.
So when the library came out, we had all that baked in. Now, the auto arranger technology that you referenced earlier,
I love it.
The idea there was you can play those chords polyphonically and you get real time polyphonic legato. But where we differ from other people who have polyphonic legato is just what Bobby said, is it breaks down your chord within a string section, maintaining the proper player count. So you've always got those 16 violinists, whereas otherwise you're going to have 16, 16, and 16. You're going to have 48 violinists.
And then sometimes it sounds like an organ because you've got such a...
Yeah. You know what? That is so true because a lot of times... Well, you actually heard that a lot back in the 80s when sampler string sections were coming out.
3 or 5 years ago you heard it.
Well, it's that big, giant hit, where you just have, instead of just hitting one...
It just doesn't sound real.
Ten keys and
it's a fact. If you do voices and you're overlaying more than 10 voices, it gets small. It stops at that point. So you have to be really careful thinking about, that sometimes less fills out a bigger picture.
So you'll have 16 players. It'll automatically divide them if you're playing like a triad or if you throw in the fourth or something.
When I say 16, I'm referring just to the first violin. So there's violins one, violins two, viola, cello, and bass. And each one of them does this exact same thing. So on violins, there's 16 players. And if you play one note on your keyboard, all of them will play. If you play two notes, it divides 8 and 8. And then if you play three notes, it divides 4, 4, and 8.
Because that's how it happened with an orchestra.
Wow.
Because then you wouldn't get more.
Right. So, and that's it's exactly what happens in an orchestra. As a composer or as a conductor, if you see that divisi or div period, you mean, you're telling that section to divide.
Wow.
And it's something very special, and it creates a realism. I grew up playing in orchestras for years.
Right.
There's a realism there that I haven't heard from any other library.
Oh, absolutely.
The denser the arrangement, the more pronounced the effect gets, too.
The cellos on your demo, on the audio range demo was just, it's goosebumps.
You really want a free copy of this?
I was telling you earlier that, I like new things. I like technology. And I don't give sample libraries, I don't give them a second look because I have so many sample libraries. I mean, you buy the Native Instruments, complete. You've got samples up the wazoo.
Absolutely.
So, I'm thinking back in the day where you do velocity crossfading and all that kind of stuff. And so when I really – and then, like I was saying, then you can get into the different types of articulation. So you can have your samples up here, but it's still basically, crossfading with however you articulate it down here. But then you see something like your sample libraries where you get some intelligence in there. You have a brain that you can work with. You've got some options. and it's doing it all in real time.
You're talking about like 100,000 lines of custom programming that it goes beyond that. I mean, it used to just be mapping. Program used to be mapping. Now it's actually programming.
Right. that's why I'm like I it's like just being introduced to a whole new world, because then I'm starting to look at this and I was excited when BFD drums came out and you can move the mics and stuff like that, And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But this is sound manipulation on a level that I didn't know that existed in just a sample library.
You've got your free copy. You've got it.
You know what?
You've earned it.
I'm sorry, but I will absolutely – you know me.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Technology. No, it is.
He means it.
It's really good. But how did you record your raw samples?
Well, like I said, I wasn't around for that initial recording, but it was recorded in town in LA. That's why it's called LA Scoring Strings, on a proper scoring stage. And it was recorded. One thing I tell you, the players were recorded in position, which we feel is very important. Now, we do have those tools, like was mentioned, so that you can take those players and move them both in terms of panning and stereo width, but also in terms of depth in the room. But if you don't use that, your section is recorded in place. So when you play all the sections together, you have a proper sound of a LA Scoring Orchestra. It was recorded with a lot of mics and a lot of great people who I can talk about. Like you said, go take a listen to the demos. And
it was interesting, the recording, as what he's saying, and I was there, you set up the seats as the orchestra is sitting. And you may be just recording violins that day, so they sit in the violin seats. When the cellies come in, you keep just the violin chairs there and they sit over there. And the mics are set up in a traditional recording session.
Do you know anything about the mics that they used or anything like that?
Yeah, I do, yeah. But, that's, I think, in-house sort of stuff. That would be kept sort of...
Can't give away all our secrets.
Yeah, can't really.
Can I guess? And then you just...
Sure, yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, well, the reason why I was just curious because they sound really good.
Nice,
and there's not... You know, sometimes... You know, strings can go from luscious to shrill.
Absolutely.
And just
nasty
so
sounding
quick.
And rosy. Yeah.
I mean, so quick.
Yeah. Biting sounding.
It's like whenever I'm mixing something and it has a string
especially
section.
Especially when you go up the octaves, you start to go, we're having problems here. Yeah.
Farfisa-ish.
Yeah, it's just, there's a fine line, and these were just done really well. I know it's,
I think you've got two copies, Mike, coming your way.
But it's really great. And so what did you work on the actual programming of the articulation? And
The initial 1.0 release of the product was out when I came on board, and my friend Andrew just realized he needed some help to keep everything going, and it became a kind of a whirlwind. And so I came on board, and I started when we were talking about auto arranger technology, which is the polyphonic legato with real-time Divisi, which sounds crazy but actually does mean something. And then this last year...
Explain it.
Last January. I did explain it earlier.
Did you actually play on it yourself?
No, I did not play on it. It's only strings. I don't play any violin.
Bazooka player.
But we released 2.0 last January. Rare. And we actually have a 2.5 update coming out, which will be free for all our users, that will just add more features. And we've added this stage and color technology. And the premise behind that was we devised a way to sample scores that we really, really liked. And I think anybody who's out here doing film work has scores that they probably just love the sound of. And like I said, we recorded the thing initially pretty dry so that we had a little bit more of a malleable sound. And what we're able to do is imprint kind of the footprint of some famous scores on our library. So you have a one-click way to completely change the timbre of the string orchestra to famous scores that you've probably heard of. So we'll be putting out more profiles and some more features in this coming update.
Cool.
You can check it out on our website. There's a video demo of that stuff. It's called Staging Color. And those are the kinds of things that keep me up nights.
It's kind of like an impulse for a convolution reverb.
It's a complex process where we devise DSP that allows you to sort of.
Do you mention the scores that you are emulating?
You'll, if you look at the preset names, you'll know what they are.
Star Battles,
Arabia.
That's right. That's right.
Hey, Rob, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
So,
I'm listening.
So you've worked with ginormous orchestras. How is the technology coming in sample libraries to – how does that compare nowadays with your work with orchestras that you used to do with like the Godzilla trailer and other ones?
Well, I mean it's – the sample libraries are getting closer and closer. They're still I think you'd have a hard time finding any composer who says he'd rather use a sample library than a real orchestra. But they're getting closer. And for a few NAMM shows, it was obvious that the brass ring was going to be this – simulated Davisi stuff, especially because a lot of players in town are used to sort of having to self Davisi. Like, you know, there are a lot of small productions where they use part sample library and part live players.
Right.
And a lot of times those players are playing to a score output from, you know, Logic or Cubase or Performer or something.
Right.
and you'll get talented players in who will sort of self Davisi. And so these sample libraries that can do it were sort of the next logical step in being able to do a better and better production on a shoestring budget. And there were a few NAMM shows when there were a lot of companies trying it, and Audio Bro definitely nailed it first and got it out there and got the big acceptance.
Thank you, Rob.
Oh, no problem. But, yeah, there were a bunch of...
Well, Rob was one of the basics.
I'm trying to remember. I mean, we're talking probably 5, 6, 7 years ago when it was starting to sort of get out there. Computers basically weren't fast enough to do it, but the idea was there. But yeah, it makes a big difference over just a static library. Although the truth is, the best thing to me is still, whether it's a static library or a dynamic one like that, you sprinkle one or two live players on each section and the whole thing comes to life in a way that I don't think a sample library can ever do it by itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that makes a lot of sense also. But boy, is it ever changed
and
from
I agree completely with the sentiment. Even personally, anytime I can use a real orchestra, there's no question in my mind. I mean, samples are a part of all of our lives now, for better or worse, but absolutely. Well,
I mean, if I'm mocking something up for a studio, I actually had to do this recently. You know, they're willing to pay for a big orchestra when the time is right, but they're not going to pay for a big orchestra for the demo.
Right.
And they expect the demo to sound the same as the final. That way they know they want to spend the money. And so you get stuck in the middle of that, that LA Scoring Strings library definitely can help you get closer to a acceptable final.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Looks like he wants a library as well now.
Not only will
I didn't bring enough copies.
Not only will it, you know, help you when you bring in a real player and help fill it out, but even if you don't bring in real players, and I'll never, ever, ever work with an orchestra, but let me tell you.
Why would you say that?
I would just have – because I know me, and I know me, but I would absolutely just have not even to record anything, just to play. You know, sometimes it's like when you sit down on a really big, expensive piano and you just want to just play and just play and just play.
I think that was a delight. Synthesizers wasn't when it came out. You could first play a chord and go, oh, like, you know, that's nearly an orchestra.
Yeah,
you know, that's the feeling you had when synths came out.
Absolutely,
I used to have such a Jones on that. That was such a great sounding thing.
Yeah,
I can just see this just giving people the same type of Jones. So,
I can't wait to hear it. It sounds so good.
I will also say, you know, as someone who has bought just about, if not every big orchestral library, I mean, the pricing of the Audio Bro stuff is completely reasonable. This is from someone who bought the entire Vienna library, so you know my main threshold.
Oh!
Your second mortgage.
You know. Well, that's
why he's in Philadelphia. He's on the run.
That's why Rob's driving the same car he's had for 30 years.
He's not driving anymore. He just pushes it more.
That's why he's stranded in Philadelphia.
The pricing. Why don't you tell us the pricing structure?
Sure, absolutely.
It's free to us, though, right?
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. The our biggest bundle is Last Full Plus Last Legato Sordino, and that's the big package of all articulations with all the Divisi sections, and then a separate package, which is Legato Sordino, which takes that whole concept with the Divisi and does it with muted legato strings, which is just a beautiful, different, lush, more subtle sound, which you hear in a lot of Hollywood scores. That package is $12.48 if you buy it together. The full package,
it's totally reasonable.
Aligned,
$12.48. I mean,
$12.48. That's right. The full library is $9.99. No decimal points, guys. And then we also have a light and a first chair version. And the light version is $3.99 right now, and the first chair version is $2.99. What they are, the light version is the same technology, all the great goodies of the big library, but just without the Divisi technology. So it's just those full string sections. It's much more like other libraries that are out there. And the first chair version includes just the soloists, because our full library includes a first and second chair for all the sections. So right. Just a soloist for all the sections, which, while not as good as having a real player in your studio, does add a bit of life to the section too when you layer it in. And those products, the $3.99 and $2.99 version, have upgrade paths to the full version, $1 for dollar plus $50 upgrade path, so you can step up down the road if you like what we do.
I'm fascinated, though. How long did it take you to put all this together?
I think Andrew labored like 18 months on the original, maybe more. You'd have to ask him. This last 2.0 update, we worked about a year and a half on. And it was mainly a technology update, but this stuff takes a lot of work.
Right.
The software development takes some time.
Yeah. Another question is, how long is the new one taking?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I want to encourage everybody to forget the lighter ones. You want the big package. You really do. Seriously. I mean, $1,200. What, $1,249?
$1,248.
$1,248.
Nice round number.
$1,248. I guarantee you do not need another giant drum sample library, okay? If you get a really good string library, it's going to add a sophistication to your music that you've never had before. And believe me, just go listen to the demo and then just go listen, watch the video tutorials, and I'm sure you agree. But for those of you that maybe can't afford that right now, we are going to give away...
My God! Really?
Two copies?
We'll give away a copy of the light and a copy of the first chair.
So, a copy of the light and a copy of the first chair. How are we going to do this?
Okay, so we're going to... I have a couple questions for you guys, and we have an email address set up called podcast@audiobro.com. And if you email us with the answers to these two questions, we'll select some at random and we'll get you a free copy. And these are two questions that I could ask of you guys, too, to see what you guys think. The first question is, many libraries now are becoming downloadable rather than hard copies, and we've gone that route as well. We still have optional discs you can order for people. But the question we have right now is, we're curious, what do you think is an ideal size, or what's the most that you would be willing to download? When does the library get too big for you guys that you feel like it's too big for you to handle over your internet connection? And the second question, and again, I'll open this up to you gentlemen, is what do you prefer in terms of mic mixing in your library? Some library developers include 3-4 mic positions, which you can mix together to find a sound. Others include just a single mic that's meant to be a great mix that we've sort of chosen for you. Obviously, with the single mix, it's a smaller library, less CPU, less RAM, but maybe you don't have the same flexibility. On the other hand, you don't have the headache of all the mic mixes. So we're curious about what you think about that for our future development, and maybe I'll ask you three guys, four guys, including the disembodied head in Philadelphia. what do you guys think?
Well, I think I'll answer first. For download, if you go in little snippets, like if it's 2 gigabytes, 3 gigabyte snippets, I don't care, as many as you need to get your product downloaded to me. I think it gets a little more difficult when it's like 10 gigs or 15 gigs, but in bite-sized pieces, three. I mean, but you know what? In the gamer world, a 12 gigabyte download is not a problem at all. And I think a lot of it has to do with your downloader. If you have a smart downloader that can pickup if your connection gets dropped.
Multiple pipes.
That's what we do.
We have a little standalone app that lets you resume and pause and all that kind of stuff.
To me, I don't think that's gonna become less and less of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the mics go, the more mics, the better. And I think to help people out is just presets. You know, if you're gonna give me a lot of options, then give me a lot of presets.
Uh-huh.
You know, because that way I want to see the range of what I can do with this, whether it's a synth or a sampler or whatever. I'd prefer as many options, but give me a lot of presets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm the savage songwriter here, so I'm just going to say whatever Bobby and Mike says, I absolutely endorse. And if they win, I want a bit of it. So over to you, Bob.
Oh, maybe Rob should answer this. Go on, Rob, you answer
it. Go, Rob.
Being the disembodied head. Actually, I'm not even a head.
That's a great name for a band,
isn't
it?
It is disembodied head. Actually, head's pretty good too.
Yeah. Oh. Cut.
I would say anything above 10 gigs, I start to think, well, that's going to take a long time. As I don't like the little 2 and 3 gig chunks, because even if I had to download something that was like 20 or 30 gigs, I want to just start it and go to bed. I don't want to have to like get up every 2 hours to start another download or 3 hours. If it's going to be massive and there's some download software that can just, you know, restart if there's a dropout or something, I'd rather just, even if it's going to take 24 hours, I'd rather start it and then not think about it till it's done.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't Omnisphere take 6 hours to load, Mike? You were telling me.
Yeah, but that's off the
off disk.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, these installs have gotten crazy. The other thing I'm going to give as an answer, I mean, so that'd be my pain threshold. But my guess is, if something said it was 20 or 30 gigs or even more, but all I was going to have to do is click and then come back to the computer in a day and a half, it's still faster than getting a disk sent to me, and I'd probably do it if I knew it was going to work.
Yeah, right,
that's
right.
True.
So that's one thing. As far as the multiple mic thing, I have to say that for most libraries, and I have bought a ridiculous number of them, for most libraries, the multiple mic thing is complete marketing garbage. It is, there's usually one that sounds great, one that's okay, and the rest are crap. And honestly, it makes the libraries bloated and huge. And once I find the one that sounds good, it's usually the only one I ever use. And I could name five, which I won't, but I could name five off the top of my head right now that give you the multiple mics, and one of them is great, and the rest are there so they can say they have more mic positions. So I'm not saying there might be one or two valid ones, but to just go crazy with multiple mic positions to me is just a complete waste. And I mean, to someone who's more like in Martin's mode, where you want to get something up and have it just sound good right away, I mean, what good is it? It's like in the old synth days where you'd call up a sound and it would be called, you know, like E-Piano 1. And then there's also E-Piano 2 through E-Piano 300 that all sound exactly the same.
Right.
And I've used them, Rob. I've used all 300.
Yeah, but I'm going on the assumption that they're all really good mic positions.
Well, they're not. But I'm telling you, they're not. when you mic an orchestra, and you're trying to simulate a great orchestra in a great room, the engineer doesn't go out and put out 50 mics and then tear them down and put up another 50 and say, which do you prefer? There are mics that sound great, and seasoned ears and engineers know what to use. Yep. And I'm willing to trust those guys because it's all they do.
Mm-hmm.
And a traditional great scoring engineer has been doing this for years. He's recording all these mics basically without EQ because he's picked the exact right mic for the right position. And invariably, I mean, I have so many times just basically trusted a seasoned engineer and had it just be right. And there's no reason a library shouldn't be based around the same idea. Flexibility mm-hmm. is often a tool of people who just don't know what they're doing.
That's me.
That's just my.
I have to agree with you, Rob. You're 100% there.
I'm fine with one good mic position. You know, give me the same mic position that we used for all the orchestral stuff we did at the Sony, you know, MGM or Streisand mm-hmm. stage, as it's called now. You know, we use the same mics every time, the same seats, the same everything, as have every other composer, basically, who's worked there since The Wizard of Oz. And there's a reason it works. And I'm honestly not that excited to hear an alternate mic position. The one we're using there pretty much works for everything.
So, mm-hmm. so let's just say, hypothetically, you had two mic positions, but instead of two mixes, one was the organic mix and one was the wet mix. One was dry, let's just say, and one was reverb. Would that help you guys? Is that something you'd go for, Rob?
Yeah, because then it's just like an effect and I can put it in as big or small a room as I want.
Mm-hmm.
But also, honestly, we usually end up using the TCM6000 reverb over the reverb that comes with any of these libraries.
Right.
It's not as accurate. It just sounds better.
Yeah. Right.
Yes, but at the same time, you know, I think for getting the most out of your investment, it can't hurt to have options, you know, especially if you want to use some of this stuff in creative ways and do some really cool stuff.
You know what? If I have two options that are great, and six options that go with them that aren't that great, just sell me the two options and make the library a third as big.
Well, you have a good point as far as if it really makes the library bloat. I mean, you have to weigh the pros and the cons. I mean, if the option isn't going to be worth the space or the download space, then
how many different sounds do you need? I mean, if it's either sounding like an orchestra in a great room or not. I mean, there's already a flaw in, if you think about it, you know, theoretically, to get the exact right sound of the orchestra in the room, you should probably have 100 bodies sitting in the chairs in the room and just have the people playing who you're recording at that moment. You know, from the first moment you record any kind of library, even one as accurate as this, it's still a compromise from the real thing. And you should be figuring out what makes it the strongest possible tool for you and what parts are just marketing bloat. And to me, you know, I don't know.
No, I agree.
Have strong feelings because I have wasted/spent yeah. so much money, and I always buy the grand plutonium version. And I mean, I probably sunk 50 grand into mic positions I'm not using.
And that's why he's in Pennsylvania right now.
He's picking up some mic positions.
Mr. Mikan.
Well, they're very valid 2 cents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, and that's why we want to hear from other people too. So if they just to remind them, the email address is podcast@audiobro.com, and hopefully you'll get some free stuff, and we'll learn what you guys like.
So if you want a copy, send them an email. All right. Well, hey, listen. I'm going to ask this question because I told them that I would. And it kind of leads on to what we were talking about and what Rob was talking about. But really quick, Martin, I had a friend of mine who wanted me to ask you a question about songwriting. And he was wanting to know if you thought it was easier or more difficult to write a song now with the technology available.
Oh.
It all stemmed from a conversation that we were having. Mm-hmm. About we were listening to XM radio and some Bob Seger came on and some old Chicago came on, and there was all these great songs that were written and that had players and that were mm-hmm. playing, and we started talking about the crutch of technology and how, you know, songs, mm-hmm. you know, getting a good song. And so then we were talking about, you know, Martin Franz, well, you know, and I was telling mm-hmm. him about you as a songwriter, and he said, well, ask him since he still writes songs, is it easier or is it harder to write a good song?
It's a great question, but it's also quite an unanswerable question because, you know, when you write a song, it's the person who's writing it. It comes down to the actual human being. If he was just sat there with a piano like Gershwin, he would make the best of that, you know. And if you had a guitarist that just played folk, he'd make the best of that guitar. And that's technology, really. You know, that all of that is technology. For me personally, I came through in the 80s when the synth was developed. And so my life, like a lot of writers at that time, was made, you know, very wide, very large. You suddenly had the palette, as we've been talking about, to have an orchestra in front of it on a keyboard. I can't say that technology now makes it easier. It makes it faster. Faster is probably the key word, that you can move quite quickly between things in the digital world. You can listen to something you've done, edit it fast. But I really do think it comes down to the individual songwriter. Each individual person has a certain way of writing. Some people write with the way they sing, you know, and they get and they come from a lyrical place. Technology for me has helped me because I was a bass player initially.
starting in the 70s, and then suddenly the synth appeared, and so I was able to learn keyboards very quickly. We see that really in people like Phil Collins, Peter Gabriel, around that time, they were able to experiment with sounds. And so I feel very fortunate, you know, if I was born in the time of Mozart, I'd have been begging by now, because, you know, you had to learn your instrument and you had to be very proficient, and you never had a tape machine to play with. And actually, I see the tape machine as an instrument. Yeah. And I think we see that with the Beatles. You know, all their work was, at a certain point, was, you know, using the studio.
Do you think technology today, though, has put a certain amount of expectations?
Yeah, I know what you're going to say. I think that there's too many options. You know, I'm very fortunate because I stay very simple, and I record, as you know, Mike, one thing at a time.
Right.
And I don't like to get too technically proficient, because it makes me too fast. And I like the time that I have to sit back and evaluate something I've done.
Well, you have no problem there.
Very true. And you know,
it's a good point, actually.
No, I do. I like the moments of not knowing, because it makes me go back to the root organic sense of what the song is saying. Because for me, you know, I'm not really writing dance music, which technology has made very, very powerful in the last few years.
But also very plain, too.
Well, maybe. But at the same time, for me, I get time to think. And so I record quite slowly, and I listen to stuff over a long period of time. So although it's helped me move fast, what I've loved about technology now, and this might answer the question a bit, is bringing mixes straight back up very quickly, you know, automation. I never had that for years, and so it's nice to leave the room at the end of a day and just say, I can hear that again tomorrow the way it was, instead of having it on a board where you had to put a piece of tape across it and say, don't touch anything. Right. Yeah.
Back and see one of the things blowing up and you've got to change it.
I finish this, and I've been through everything, you know, right from the beginning of, you know, having the first drum machines, right through, it's true, I'm that old, mate. What is that? And, I don't find it any easier. I find it a tiny bit faster. That's for me, but nice. I'm a bit of, you know, I'm...
No, that makes a lot of sense.
And I still think it's very important for the songwriters today, and you can see why the songs suffer, is you can see back, and I'm going to say around the 60s, 70s and 80s, there was a lot of time of thinking. So you did the music with players and you stepped back and you listened. Now, because of technology, we actually race to the finish line a little bit too quick, and the song suffers.
But don't you also think that now we have a history, you know? We have something, you know, when you write a song and it sounds like something, people could say, oh, that sounds like so-and-so. And mm-hmm. back then, it's like, you know, when Styx did Come Sail Away, and they did that break with the Art Odyssey.
You like that, did you?
That.
I'm just saying
they were
fucking hell. We're gonna say Kansas next, aren't we? That was a good song.
Rush. He likes Rush.
No, I'm just saying that was unique, and that was
Kansas,
you know,
was.
They took
what were you saying? Sorry, Mike, I lost it. As soon as you said Styx, I went into a kind of semi-heart attack. Very much. They all wore suits, didn't they? Yellow suits.
That was Mr. Roboto.
Yeah.
That was
Mr. Roboto. There you go. Look at the title.
But what I'm saying is, you know, taking those kind of risks
Go back to it. I'm going to be sensible now, just that you threw me off with them. I was in a place of quality for a second there, you know.
Styx.
Go again. Say again. We'll finish this. I'll be real quick.
What do you think of Styx?
All I was going to say was, you know, nowadays we have a history and of a lot of music that back in the days they didn't have, right? Mm-hmm. So when you had people like, now I'm afraid to talk, but I said Styx, you know, Come Sail Away with that orchestral part with the Arp Odyssey. You know, they did that. Nobody else, you know, did that back then. Nowadays,
it's like the Mellotron. When Supertramp and Genesis were using that, it was new technology.
You try to do some of that stuff nowadays, and you know, people will have the same reaction you just had. You know, I don't know. It just seems like to be original and to try to. I don't know. Maybe it's just the same old, same old. You just, you know, nothing.
I'm not quite sure what you're saying, but what are you saying? Sorry,
I'm saying that there's been so much music. Like, there was so many it's late, but essentially...
If you think about it, Mike, though, every time all through the eras, it was technology. You're thinking about the Beatles came in with the red, you know, board, and that was really complicated. And so, that you know, it was always dealing with technology, always, always with technology. I just think that it's actually changed from the songwriter now sitting down with a guitar or piano with players, and he sat there with a computer. That's the big difference.
Well, yes.
And a screen. And he's actually collaborating with a screen. But if we go back, the player, you know, musicians in the early days were collaborating with boards and studios came. It's not been too long ago before, you know, when studios were developed. Right. I mean, you know, we're talking 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s, when suddenly records came about.
And then I saw that really quick,
let me just explain. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, look at the Beatles. The Beatles came on the scene. There's only one Beatles. And then you get Bowie. There's only one Bowie. And each one of these is a little brick in the musical wall. Right. Well, now we've had so many bricks in this musical wall. It's harder and harder to find a maverick that's going to fill in.
And that's where
the whole wall of
people
music.
Are looking to technology for inspiration.
Right.
But whereas, in truth, and I mean, obviously, music's never going to be exhausted. But pop music, we've heard it. We've saturated with hearing so much stuff. There's really not much else to.
Right.
And it's nearly silly saying that, but from a pop song point of view, it's really hard to come up with something completely original that's not been done before. So everybody's like, okay, let's stick the voice through of this, and let's do this, and there's technology, and technology's been the last 20 since the 80s really started to be the last the last hope for new changes, for new writing, because the writing hasn't really changed much.
Don't you think that pop has also just become closer to performance art since it's become so visual? I mean, the Beatles you could call pop, but their intention was making and writing great songs
that would last.
I don't want to be one of those people that's so down on the current state of music, but I do sometimes get the impression that there's much less of the focus on great song, great performance of the song, rather than instead it's very much about a great performance of a show.
You're right. Mm-hmm.
And there's crossover. I mean, Martin and I were talking about Peter Gabriel earlier. God knows that guy can put on a crazy visual show, but at the same time, he's written some of the greatest songs you've ever heard. The Beatles, they pushed so hard with technology every album. And I have to believe if those guys continued on, they would have experimented with crazy things in the 70s and things like that. But at the same time, it's a bad analogy because those guys wrote insanely good songs to begin with. It's one thing to experiment with an insanely good song, and it's another to just experiment.
Right. Well, I think this is a great thing you're saying there. And we talked earlier about Arvo Pärt, a lot of his music being used in films now, and that's, you know, really old fashioned Renaissance, you know, music that's just looked at and nothing really. Although you think about it as modern, it's still being recorded on old instruments. I think it's. And I have to say this for myself, it's the man who sits there writing the songs. It's the man who writes the songs. And I think it will come around again. I think people, you know, you've seen a lot of kids, they want to go back to Joni Mitchell. They want to find out what Jackson Brown did. They want to find out what the Beatles did. Because there's something intangible in the human writing of a good song. Technology now for me is, and I think this answers the question, it's great, it's brilliant, but I always had a Lindrum, I always had a piano, I always had a bass guitar and an amplifier. That was technology. It comes down to the human being making something special. And at the moment, being a little bit doomy about it, I think technology's overwhelming the airwaves a bit, and we're getting lackluster individual songs. Right. I don't think there's anything absolutely unique popping up. We're hearing a lot of the same stuff, and we're hearing almost one man in it with his laptop doing the same thing over and over again. And I think people will just turn around and say, "Where's the song?" At a certain point, you know.
You know what? That's a great answer, and we're just going to leave it at that.
You just want to get off that.
Because we've been no, it is. That's a great answer.
Oh, shut up!
No,
great answer. Go.
Comes down to the person. It comes down to wanting some more.
Yeah, the human being.
The human being. Yeah. And if you want to add some human being to your music, buy the LA Score and Sound String Library. How's that? How's that for a tie-in?
It was a good plug
to wrap this whole thing up. All right. Well, hey, listen, we're going to have to end the podcast because we've gone way too long. But you know what? After the start that we had,
that was great. This was
really good.
Yeah. Great fun. Yeah.
And before we go, really quick, everybody, just why don't you tell me really quick what you're working with, Bob?
Sebastian and I and Andrew today have been working on the new
great
sample library coming
something
out.
We're building actually a plugin to take a very plain, boring American accent like mine and turn it into the mellifluous sound of Bobby Summerfield.
Exactly.
And at the same time, it's also going to just raise your disposition just a little bit.
Yes. And every now and again, you'll have a spot of Tourette's.
make sure not to make it an Artaz plugin.
Hey, Rob, what are you working on really quick?
Well, I don't remember where we left off last time, but I'm still working with the band in Texas. We've written 9 songs for the first album, and it's going incredibly well. And then working on an unrelated project on the East Coast, and things are going well, and I should be seeing you guys in the next couple weeks, hopefully.
Awesome. Looking forward to seeing you there, brother.
Kunky Funks.
And Martin, what are you working on?
Well, this Wednesday,
good evening.
Yes, me and Bobby and myself are going to do our first radio show together.
Yes,
and it's actually called Bob. What's it called? The show?
I was thinking of calling it the Kunky Funks,
and we'll leave it at that. That's a bit of a you have to work that out. I think you can work that out. But actually, we're going to do it. Play all the music that we grew up on, and
there weren't many laptops involved.
No, we're going to enjoy playing some of the stuff because we're so
old.
and a lot of the stuff we like over the years together. So we're going to play some of the stuff that we just grew up with and we're enthusiastic about. So we're really looking forward to that. And I'm still writing my little memoirs of all the people I wrote with, which I'm enjoying doing, and going to the Huntington and Pasadena and sitting under a tree and trying to remember everything, which is a bit difficult at this age. But I drop off to sleep a lot under the tree.
He dozes off in his tea.
And Mike, you're helping me put together another little studio and a room I've developed called the Owl's Nest, which is like a bohemian little room where I want to collaborate.
It's pretty cool.
Put a new system in and... So I'm having I'm really at this point very excited about the next few days because I'm about to do the first radio show with Mr. Summerfield.
Actually, talking about radio shows, I don't know if I mentioned it 2 weeks ago. Martin and I's common mate is Robbie Williams, and he's got a little radio show called Radio Rude Box. You should check that out because you were talking about pop music.
Right.
The last one was about Brit pop. Anybody listen to it? It's quite. Should listen to it.
And well, Bobby is featured on that.
I am in the nude. Yeah. But what I would like. What we should say before we go, right, is to wish Mike, who is going this Friday, to have a bit of a chop.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, it's easy.
Well, by the time this posts, he already has recovered.
Yeah, that's right.
That's true.
No, he's popping in the hospital for a very, very little
lobotomy.
Thing. But we just want to wish him the best of luck.
Thanks,
and we love him dearly, don't we?
Oh,
yes.
Love you guys. Hey, I want to encourage people, and we'll put up some information as soon as they tell me about where they can listen to your little show that you guys are doing.
Yeah.
When Bobby and Martin talk music, it's on a level.
Well,
that,
what's going to be interesting about this
really
about this show though is we're playing vinyl as well.
Yep.
And we're going to sort of interlace it with a lot of the people that we worked with through the years. So it's going to be an emotional thing as well.
It's
going to be funky, I can tell you.
It's going to be funky.
All right, well, we got to wrap this up. But before we go, really quick, Sebastian, what is the email address that they need to answer those two questions?
It's podcast@audiobro.com.
podcast@audiobro.com. Answer the question, send in an email.
Get some free stuff.
They should get at least 7 because we've got 8 listeners now.
No, my mom died, so it's only 7.
Listening to the show.
but it should all be good.
The Styx reference killed her.
And Mike,
she vomited and then she was gone.
Yes.
Anything you've been working on that we should know about other than the excitement coming up?
Well, get the podcast working.
Yeah, get the podcast working. I just did some Toshiba commercials. They're starting to run, I think, actually this weekend. So I spent a whole week sound designing bees. And really quick, it was let's sound design bees. Let's spend a week and a half And the bees that they ended up going with were the ones that sound the most unsound designed. It was like bees 1.0 went all the way up to like bees, you know, 6.0, and we ended up with bees 1.0.
It's terrible when you have a bad buzz.
No, but I did find out that there is a fine line between bee and a fly. A bee can turn into a fly really quick.
Wow.
Really quick. Yeah.
So when it don't sting you, though, do
they? No, but just think about that. If you were going to have to sound design a sound of a bee and then also a sound of a fly, you know, those are – it's a fine line between the
Fascinating.
Two.
That's going to come useful for you next chorus.
All right. Well, hey, listen, if you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. I want to thank Jeremy for getting the show up and running, and I want to thank you guys for
submitting.
I want to thank Rob for staying awake.
Yeah.
And thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses AFEX's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.